I'm Mark Peterson, and this is Before, During, and After, a podcast from FEMA. On April 8th, 2024, a total solar eclipse will cross North America, passing over Mexico, the United States, and Canada. This is no doubt one of nature's most awe-inspiring events. The moon passes between the sun and the earth, completely blocking the face of the sun. The sky will darken as if it were dawn or dusk. And while the skies will be graced with this celestial spectacle, at the same time, millions will be captivated across the United States. The day will be filled with festivals and revelers who traveled from far and wide to view the total eclipse in the path of totality. So on today's episode, we're diving deep into the science behind the phenomenon and general safety precautions with experts from NASA. But then we'll take it back to Earth and explore the meticulous planning efforts undertaken by Ohio and Indiana Emergency Management, just two of the states from Texas to Maine that are getting ready for April 8th. Dr. Kelly Quirk from NASA, I'm thrilled to join the worlds of emergency management at FEMA and to talk about some of the celestial opportunities that are going to be happening here in April. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
Kelly, I know that a number of our states in the Midwest and throughout the country, from Texas to Maine, are so excited about what is going to be happening April 8th with the total solar eclipse. Tell me a little bit about what they can expect and what it is.
So on April 8th, just before noon, it'll start in Texas, where the moon will start to move across the sun. So if you were just going about your day and didn't know that was anything was happening on April 8th, you might not notice it for a while. But then when it becomes peak, when the moon actually completely covers the sun, it will be total darkness in those areas. There will be dark enough that you can actually see stars in the sky and other planets. You'll be able to also experience basically the whole horizon all around you, 360 degrees, will look like a sunset or a sunrise. It'll get a little colder. The winds will change. You'll notice some animals. If you have crickets, crickets might come out. Roosters or birds come to roost. And then if you're lucky, towards the center, you get 4.5 minutes of that totality, of that experience of looking at the sun and being able to actually see the sun's corona or its outer atmosphere that's millions of degrees and streams out constantly from the sun. And because it's a solar maximum, that's the time when the sun's super active, we hope to see a lot of different structures and a lot of things during that time.
We know that it will affect different areas at different times of the day. So for example, in Indiana and Ohio, we're looking at it, it's sort of like the very middle of the day, roughly. Does it look different if you are experiencing it maybe in the more the morning or later in the afternoon?
The difference will be where in the sky the sun is. So it's how high in the sky the sun would be based on the time of day. So the moon's shadow is racing across the earth at thousands of miles an hour. So you only get a very short period of time, but it will take some time to get from Texas all the way out through Maine.
Sure. I know that there are many millions of Americans that are going to be traveling for this event. How often does something like this happen?
So in some ways, it's relatively common. Somewhere on Earth, every about 18 months, there is a solar eclipse. Now, most of the Earth is water, so a lot of times it's out over an ocean. But what's unique about this is that it takes between 400 and 1,000 years on average for a single location to have an eclipse. So that's why it's so important and so special to experience it in the areas that are going to get the eclipse this time.
Wow, that's incredible. So this truly is not just a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, but once in many, many lifetimes.
Yes, definitely. And we're so special here on Earth that we just happen to have a moon that's the right size and distance away to cover up the sun. I mean, there are other moons that go in front of the sun and would block it out partially, or maybe even more so. However, we just have this very special arrangement here on Earth that we're actually able to see this. So it is really a very special event.
So NASA has been thinking about this, obviously, for a very long time. And actually, so have our emergency management partners throughout the area. They've actually been planning for this for more than a year in some cases, maybe even 2 years, because so many people are going to be moving. What resources has NASA put together for all of the people that are so excited about this, the travelers who want to experience it?
We put together a bunch of resources that are online that folks can utilize to educate themselves and to really fully experience the solar eclipse. We have safe viewing methods from glasses that will be available at the sunspots where there are NASA participation to indirect viewing methods, how to make that pinhole viewer with a simple box that you might have laying around the house, or using even a kitchen strainer or your own hands to make a pinhole so that you can actually view the non-fully eclipsed or partially eclipsed sun. So there's many resources online. There's also the ability to do citizen science, so to join NASA in the science that we're doing during these eclipses. You can record those animal sounds that we were talking about earlier that you might hear during an eclipse, as well as take temperature measurements and take images of the sun to actually get a better picture of how big the sun actually is.
I know that there are many precautions that people need to take when thinking about viewing the actual event, but I know in other areas, this becomes a big tourist attraction, right? And so there are some considerations that people need to take when they're out there, you know, traversing the area. What are some of the things that you're concerned about for people who are out maybe traveling hundreds of miles to come see it?
Definitely. So safety is our number one priority in these eclipse activities. And the first is, again, eye safety. Unless the sun is completely totaled up in that path of totality, that narrower band across the U.S. and those 13 states, unless it's completely covered, you need some other viewing methods because it will it could hurt your eyes. So we were first and foremost making sure that there's eye safety involved. And then the other safety measures are somewhat those that you would take precaution at other times, things such as, making sure that you have snacks, that you have a plan of where you're going, that your cell phone is charged, kind of basic safety so that you can anticipate things like possible long wait times leaving right after the eclipse, because folks come for the eclipse and kind of trickle in and it might be a few hours. And then after it's gone, folks do tend to leave right after that. So we are encouraging folks to try to stay a little later to kind of dissipate that, but also make sure, again, that you have the water and the snacks and the ability and some patience in leaving the event.
Yeah, because a lot of the area, I mean, this is America after all, and a lot of the area is rural.
Yes.
I mean, there's distances you got to traverse to get to gas stations and things like that, right? We're really excited to support our emergency management partners as they think about planning of all the movement and the resources that might be needed to work with that many people. But before I let you go, I'm just, since we don't always have an opportunity to speak with somebody from NASA, which is so exciting, but how does studying a total solar eclipse really contribute to our understanding of the sun and the solar system? I got to ask you that since you're here.
Definitely. So there are so many different ways. And this goes back actually even 100 years or so, where Einstein's general relativity was proven through a solar eclipse. Because the sun is a great big massive body, it bends space-time. And so by looking at the stars behind it and noticing that they were bent, they proved that the sun was obeying or was part of general relativity. So that was some original science done with the eclipses. And now what we're looking at is it falls into a couple of categories. The categories of looking at the sun itself and that hot outer corona that comes out and interacts with the Earth in terms of space weather. So that's space weather that affects our electronic devices, our GPSs, things like that. So we are trying to study that more and more and understand it. And it also then has an effect on the Earth. So we study the effects of the sudden day-night cycle on the Earth, and that simulates actually some of the space weather that might hit the Earth and collapse our ionosphere, or the layer of our atmosphere that most of our communications go through. So when we can study that and feed those into our models, we're better able to prepare ourselves for when the sun throws one of her solar flares or a coronal mass ejection or some other space weather phenomena at us.
Okay, Kelly, I really appreciate it. Anything else you think we should let the viewers know?
really just excited to share the wonder and beauty of the solar corona. Take a minute to just allow yourself to drink it in and really experience it. It is a full body experience. It's not just a sight. You'll feel cold, wind, other things like that. So definitely have a great experience.
The events high above are just part of the spectacle on April 8th. In fact, state and local public safety have been planning for more than a year for the massive influx of stargazers looking to get the best seat in the house, the path of totality. That zone, that path, traverses areas from Texas to Maine, and two states in particular are gearing up for science, fun, and the potential for a variety of all hazards consequences leading up to, during, and after the skies darken. All right, so to talk a little bit more about all of the impacts of the solar eclipse and the things that we can expect from a state perspective, because it traverses so much land mass in many states, but it's specifically, we're going to talk with Indiana, Ohio, and the director of the Emergency Management and Preparedness at the Indiana Department of Homeland Security, Mary Moran. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me and giving me the opportunity to talk total solar eclipse.
And then also, I'm excited to be joined by the executive director from the Ohio Emergency Management, Sima Merrick. Sima, thank you.
Thanks, Mark. I really appreciate it. And it's an honor to actually be sitting with Mary because we work closely with Indiana. And of course, this is just another one of those events, although a pre-planned event that we're able to coordinate our teams in preparing for this. So I really appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's great to kind of talk to the both of you because obviously you're neighbors and the solar eclipse will, if you can see the map, traverse through Indiana and then into Ohio. And so let's start with Indiana. Mary, what are you expecting from your perspective?
Well, we spent months and months and months reviewing after action reports from the 2017 event. And some of the things that we are anticipating as being the biggest challenges for us are going to be transportation issues, because we have over 64 counties that will be at full totality during the event. We are also anticipating communication issues, especially for the use of cell phones the day of and the day after. So we've been working on communication issues with private carriers and our public safety communication agency. We are anticipating our infrastructure for those 64 counties to pretty much be overwhelmed. Their restaurants, gas stations, parks, campgrounds, all of that have been booked for years in some cases for this event. And we had a figure that in Indiana, it will be like 71 football games ending at the same time will be the crowd that we are anticipating.
Sima, is that similar from your perspective? Are those similar planning assumptions?
So interesting, somewhat. Like Mary says, transportation and congestion, and I'm using the word congestion as we've planned, because in addition to the transportation impacts, we know that communities will have a lot of people in it more than what they're used to, right? But as we've done successfully in Region 5, we and in Ohio, we started planning and talking about this in 21. And today I was in a meeting where someone said we were talking about COVID and someone in 21 said, what are we doing for the 2024 eclipse? And we kind of chuckled about that, but we have been planning since then and putting messaging out and making sure people are preparing. And those planning assumptions, we've stayed right on top of Merck, and we've shared them. And we've told folks, please pay attention to these. These are a starting point. We'll refine them as data becomes more specific as we get closer. But data assumptions and the data mechanisms that we're using for these influxes of people will still remain the same, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, to that point, have you done any analysis or do you have any figures on what the tourist impact will be throughout each of your states and maybe even some of the economic impact?
For Indiana, we've calculated that in the path of totality currently, there's like 1.4 million Indiana residents in that path. So we know that they will be mostly there for the event. But we have gotten some estimates working with our NDOT, our Department of Transportation, DNR, and then in the states that experienced this in 2017. And we're looking at a reasonable estimate of between 500,000 and a million additional people in our path that day.
I'm in agreement with Mary. I think we started out with around a million or 1.2 as the Ohio Department of Transportation and our data sets have been kind of mined more, having the refinement in the modeling. We have said that anywhere into Ohio, in particular along the line of totality. So Mary mentioned her counties. We have 35 counties of the 88 that will have full totality. Nine of those counties are along the line, right? The line. So we are now using somewhere between 175 and 575,000 people into the state, in addition to everyone else in the state who will be out traveling and moving around. So our refinement has come with the modeling and the kind of information that we're starting to get based off of lodging, based off of tourism, based off of people reserving space at our state parks. We have, I think, 28 state parks that are in the area of the eclipse. And they're running pretty high non-vacancy rates, right? So they are booked between 90 and 95% right now. Now, additionally, the lodging associations say we can kind of give you better numbers after the event. We said we'd like to kind of see them ahead of the event. So we've been really pushing on them. And we have a great relationship with them and our Office of Tourism is doing a great job. But it helps us pay attention to what kind of rooms are being rented, for how long, what will traffic flow and traffic congestion be like. And we plug that into our modeling systems with our Ohio Department of Transportation.
So Sima, you know, what is it about a total eclipse that kind of gives a real need in the from the state perspective to plan so far in advance for an event that essentially, I'll look at it, the numbers right here. I mean, in Cleveland, Ohio, the totality begins at 3:13 p.m. Eastern time and ends at 3:17. So essentially 4 minutes. And that's the same in Evansville, in Carbondale and Paducah. It's a 4 minute event, but it's a lot of planning that goes into this. What are some of the things that you're worried about considering that goes into this event?
So I think, first of all, the question mark just is that it, the uniqueness in the nature, right? I mean, it was the early 1800s, I think, since, was that right? And we won't have another one for about 100 years. So anyone who's alive right now will never have this opportunity again. The other part of it is that Ohio is seventh largest in the United States, and we are so accessible by our interstate systems. So we were kind of often referred to as the gateway to the Midwest or the gateway to the East, depending on where you're sitting. So people come through here. We have the Ohio Turnpike that crosses then over Indiana. It moves over into New York. So a lot of people can get here, and the percentage, 70% of the U.S. population can make it to Ohio within a 24-hour drive, I think makes the draw. We also are just, seems like we have a lot of large events and people know that. So there is a lot of resources available. And in by most human nature, not all, because some people, some of my family is like, I'd rather watch it by myself in a field. But the majority of people kind of want to be with people where there are resources, there are capabilities, there are festivals, there's other things to do. So we have some pretty cool tourism draws to Ohio. And then you add this once in a lifetime opportunity, an event. And I think that's what makes people want to be here.
Yeah. Mary, from your perspective, and I want to come back to some of the after actions that you had looked into in the past, but from your perspective, and perhaps it was identified in some of those after actions, what are some of the biggest risks and real concerns that you're building into those plans that are sort of things that you're maybe even pre-positioning?
A couple of the big items, we read a report from the Red Cross that in the 2017 event, they spent the following 10 hours after the event doing nothing but bringing gas cans to cars that had run out of gas in the middle of traffic. And then those cars become bricks for the thousands of people behind them. So we started immediately working with our transportation partners on dealing with that. Another thing that we had we weren't considering, first of all, that started showing up in the after action reports is medical emergencies that were happening in the crowd and then the challenge of getting first responders to the crowds. One of the things, Indiana has been hit hard recently with a significant increase in fentanyl deaths. And as part of one of the 2017 after action reviews, we realized that that was an issue in one of the other states. So one of the big challenges we've worked on is trying to find where Narcan doses are and how they can be made to be mobile. Can we put them on golf carts? Does an entity have enough? Because a lot of communities have those dosages available, but they're in, you know, like churches or school buildings. And how would we get them the dose to the person that needed it quickly? We are very much concerned, just tagging on to that, with the event that could happen inside the event. At the end of March, beginning of April in 2023, we had 53 tornadoes in one day in Indiana. So another thing that we are very nervous about is what kind of weather will be delivered that day. We could have sunny and 80 or a blizzard or tornadoes. So weather is a big concern for us, the medical issues. And then the other thing is we had always thought that our focus of planning and dealing should be the main event of the day. Well, what we learned from the other states, most of the incidents that they had to deal with were once the event ended and people were trying to get back home. So we beefed up our planning for our EOC is going to be activated 2 days before the event and then a day after the event with all our emergency support functions in the EOC for that span of time. And that's how we're messaging it. Don't treat this as a 4-minute event, treat it as a 3-day event in your preparation.
Sima, the Ohio Emergency Management is co-located, is part of Ohio State Police or Highway Patrol. How are you partnering with them?
Yeah, so in Ohio, we have the Department of Public Safety. So the agencies listed there are the Highway Patrol and Emergency Management are each divisions. In the EOC and the Emergency Management Building, we have our intelligence and our watch office staff, as well as the Highway Patrol mid-level command staff, that are the folks that are a 24-hour ability to launch law enforcement resources. So we have this kind of trifecta, right, of where we have a 24-hour operation. We can reach into each other. We can look at what's happening from the intelligence world and that data mining. We have the Highway Patrol and the law enforcement resource mechanisms and their breadth of aviation resources. And then all of us here at Emergency Management and the state EOC. So we kind of work, we work hand in hand in blue sky days, but during events, when we activate the EOC, which we will activate during the eclipse, those timeframes are being figured out. So we'll go to assessment and monitoring probably Friday or Saturday previous to the eclipse go into a partial activation over the weekend. And then from there, our ESF partners will be on site. And we'll also have that virtual component where people can listen in if they're a cabinet agency but don't have a direct correlation into the EOC. But with all of that and what Mary was saying is that you asked earlier, Mark, about the early decision for planning and moving forward and what were our messages. You know, we've held and continue to hold partner meetings with state and county partners to discuss not only that planning efforts, but preparedness efforts. And we've refined them for them as we've moved forward to think about those carry-on response activities if they were needed. Think about your county EOCs. Think about who you have in them. Where are your gaps right now? And if you have gaps in staffing, think about your partnerships and know you can come to the state also for us through a mission request to source that for you. At the state level, we pull all of our state agencies together and have through our stakeholder meetings and also through our points of contact. We're doing calls with the county emergency management agencies. We just had one today, and we give those updates of what's happening at the state level and how are things being coordinated and how do you find information out about what's going on. So frankly, I've been trying to tell people with some ease, right, when I do interviews, that this is no different than preparing for any other event. It's just that you have pre-notice. If you don't like congestion and you hate traffic, your community's probably going to be kind of busy. So maybe you should go to the grocery store the week before. Fill your gas tank up the week before. And then, you know what? Stay home and enjoy it. Just know that we ask you to pack your patients, come early, stay late, pack some snacks, and just be patient. And that's what I try to tell people, because some of our counties recently have been really kind of concerned. So they're like, we want you to have 3 days. All of that is standard, and I don't dismiss that. We should have 3 days of supplies, but I try to tell them, you have the opportunity to do it ahead of time. It's planned, right? I can't postpone it. I can just keep telling you that this is the day. So make the best of it and try to prepare early.
Mary, are you doing similar things in connecting directly with the many communities that are going to be in the path of the eclipse?
Yes. What we've tried to do, like Sima, we started planning years ago for this, and we now have what we're calling a state planning team that has about 147 different representatives from state agencies to local governments, all 92 of our emergency management agencies, educational institutions. Yes, we brought everybody that we thought could have a piece of having to deal with an issue or could potentially have a resource. Like, we've brought in our medical community, our hospital systems, our school systems. We're talking to our tourist. We have it's a Visit Indiana. So we have just tried to be all inclusive like Sima has. And then as we get closer to the event, similar to what Sima is doing, we're refining some of the actions that we're taking once we figure out who has what. But yes, pretty much everything that Sima is doing, it sounds like we are mirroring here in Indiana.
So for maybe both of your states, I'm looking at the visualization tool that NASA has put together that kind of describes the path. And you have a number of cities that are going to be impacted, larger cities in Indiana, you got Evansville and Indianapolis, and in Ohio, it looks like maybe even parts of Dayton into Cleveland, maybe even parts of Toledo. Mary, what is an area of focus, of celebration for this eclipse in Indiana?
Well, actually, kind of what you just said. We have that strip, like Simmel was mentioning, where the path of totality, we have 12 counties that sit along that line and then 64 total involved. There are thousands of events going on in that path. In Indianapolis alone, NASA is coming and is coming to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway where our 500 race is held. NASA is going to be doing an event that day. Indianapolis had at all of our museums and our baseball fields, everywhere that has a place where people can gather is having events. Like you mentioned, Evansville has just been knocking it out of the park with everything they have been doing, all the community events. So we have Indianapolis and Evansville are our two biggest. But like I said, if you go to our Visit Indiana site, we have an interactive map of all the different events that are occurring, and there are thousands. So pretty much the whole strip is going to be one giant good time that day, I hope.
Sima?
Thanks, Mark. You know, just to dovetail onto Mary, right? So we have the majority of our metropolitan areas, our metropolitan statistical areas are impacted. Toledo, Dayton, Cincinnati, Columbus, Akron, Canton, Cleveland. I mean, those are all big population centers. 7.5 million of our 11.5 million live within those, right? So big events along those lines, like Mary said, NASA, Cleveland. Let's go to Cleveland, Cuyahoga, and Lorain counties right now. Cleveland has, NASA's doing a big deal from NASA Glenn. Also at the Lake Erie Science Center, which is right there next to the Rock and Roll Museum and Hall of Fame. So they have big events planned for that day, for the whole weekend. In addition to that, in Cuyahoga County, it's the weekend of the Women's Final Four NCAA basketball tournament. So it's not in Indiana this year, which, it, you know, between Indiana and Cleveland, it's here. And then the Cleveland Guardians home opener is actually the day of the eclipse as well. They're doing a bunch of amazing stuff, as is NASA out near the intersection of 75 and just north of Route 70. There is the Neil Armstrong Museum there, so they're doing big events there. Toledo has events. The Lake Erie Islands have events. We're looking at the Sandusky area. I think Cedar Point's open earlier, which is, you know, big amusement park. So like Mary, in the state of Indiana, there are probably thousands of festivals set up. We are upwards of 400 that we are aware of that counties have put into us so far, and that list is growing. So it gives us that snapshot, Mark. I mean, folks at speedways, county fairgrounds, cities, recreational sites, the state parks, and they're trying to make it festival-wise, Mark, right? So the weekend, come in, see what we have to offer, look at our tourism. Hey, and you don't have to leave right away when it's over. Stay another day, right? Get some good food in Cleveland, enjoy the ethnic part of Toledo, enjoy the Great Lakes, even though it's April, because I'm going to tell you, this weekend there was an event up around the Lake Erie Islands and there were already boaters coming over to it. And it is cold. It is cold on that lake. So I anticipate people will dunk their boats quick and early. And it's going to be a great show. We just have to continue to work hard from the public safety space to make sure that we're keeping people informed, prepared, and to enjoy a safe experience.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Before, During, and After, a podcast from FEMA. If you'd like to learn more about this episode or other topics, or have ideas for future episodes, visit us at fema.gov/podcast.